Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:28 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is March 29th, and the yield curve spread, which is the difference between the 10-year and the 2-year, inverted for a brief period in here today. It's going to close out the day closer to about 5 basis points, and that starts the clock on the next recession. So one thing that we can certainly look at on this chart, and it's even clearer if we look at it over a longer time scale, is that the most common type of event that happens after an inversion, you get a big ramp higher, and then the spread tends to peak well in excess of 200 basis points, probably closer to 250 basis points, rolls over and starts to contract again. On this occasion, it peaked a year ago at a much lower level than it had in the past. Well, that's not difficult to understand why, because we're in such an incredibly low interest rate environment that there's just not sufficient difference between the long and the short end of the curve to create a 250 basis point spread. And now we're starting to see it contract again. So we're in an inverted territory. So that would suggest that we're likely to have a recession at some point in 2023 or early 2024. And usually there's a lead of between anything from 6 to 18 months from an inversion, which would put us probably into the third quarter of 2023. So now is the time to pay particular attention to the consistency of trends and the ability of the recent rebounds to hold. But of course, in any kind of inversion, or following any inversion over the course of the last couple of decades, there's always argument about what does the signal mean. Is it really as efficacious on this occasion as it has been in the past? And there's always a convincing argument for why it's different this time. Well, definitely there is one thing that is different this time, and that is that there is this huge divergence between the 10-year and the 2-year, and then the difference between that spread and the 10-year and the 3-month. Because the 10-year and the 3-month is still close to recovery highs and at 188 basis points. So a lot of ink has been spilled trying to determine what exactly is going on here. But we don't really need to come up with a very strong narrative. It's really simple. We've had outsized demand for short-dated paper. Anything that's a near cash item has been in incredibly strong demand. So when we look at the 3-month yield, then we're presented here with a yield of about 50 basis points. Well, the Fed funds rate is 50 basis points. So then that is basically the bond market saying that there isn't going to be a rate hike between now and June. But then we have the world interest rate function on Bloomberg. So when we look at that WIRP, well, we can see that from the US Treasuries curve, there's going to be 175 basis points before the end of the year, and potentially more than that. So that can't possibly be true if 3-month yields are accurate. So the futures market is telling us one thing, the bond market's telling us something else. And those are mutually incompatible conclusions. So something must be going on to affect prices. And of course, it's simple enough. We've had this huge acceleration in 10-year yields. And if one is really fearful about inflation, and there has been a lot of scaring commentary about inflation, then you don't want to own long-dated bonds. And if you have a choice, well, you'd have sold them and gone to cash. Or you'd have sold them and invested in equities. And we've seen a bid come in for both of those. So the dollar index has popped on the upside over the course of the last few months, and it's now pausing in the region of that psychological 100 level. And then, of course, we've also had this rebound on stocks. and the S&P 500 has rebounded really quite impressively and broke the sequence of lower rally highs. So that's also a really important signal that money is coming out of long-dated bonds and into other assets, and anything that can offer some form of hedge against inflation. Well, the dollar rising because there is the potential for tightening, therefore there'll be less supply of dollars. That was the primary reason why the dollar would rally. Then we've also had stocks, because companies get to pay dividends, then they can buy back their shares, or they can increase their prices, all of which help to insulate investors from inflation. But then there are lots of investors who just don't have the opportunity to do either of those things. They have to own bonds. And if the long end of the curve is most susceptible to inflation, well, then the short end of the curve is least susceptible to inflation. So there's been this outsized demand for near cash money. And that's obviously been one of the factors which has contributed to the widespread between the 10-year and the 3-month. And then the inversion that we've had between the 10-year and the 2-year. But realistically, it doesn't say very much about the outlook for growth. It's much more about the fact that the long end of the curve is responding very clearly to the inflationary threat. Then, of course, in here today, we also had an easing of fears about an escalation of the war between Russia and Ukraine. So oil prices dipped initially and then finished out the day pretty much unchanged, down only about $1.78. But we do have a lower high, and I think it's more likely than not we're going to see more ranging than trending around these levels. So when we go back and look at the longer term chart, and we can see that it's really not unusual to see prices going sideways, and sometimes for years at a time. And back in 2013, or I guess from 2012 through to 2014, prices ranged between about $100 and $120. Now we've had a really strong acceleration up to current levels, and I don't think it's unlikely that we see, I believe it's likely that we're going to have at least a short term, potentially a medium term range around the $100 area. Now that doesn't mean that we're not going to have volatility. There's going to be a lot of choppy action here. But I think it's unlikely that NATO or our Europeans in particular are going to remove sanctions on Russia. The only way that that could happen quickly is if Russia makes it a condition of a negotiated settlement with Ukraine. But that's an awfully big ask. And the problem, of course, is that you can't believe a liar. So when Russia lied about their intentions about invading and then did it, and now are saying that they're going to pull back, well, people are justifiably leery of taking them at their word. That would suggest that oil prices are more than likely going to range rather than pull back in a big way. And we also saw some meaningful moves in markets like wheat and corn. So wheat prices peaked earlier this month. They continue to pull back, but I think it's still extremely likely that we're in a higher price environment overall. And they could quite easily unwind the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. But it's unlikely that they're going to move back down into the base formation. One of the commodity markets which is beginning to attract interest is lean hogs. There's swine flu in Mexico. So that's helping to support prices overall. And when we look at this on a weekly basis, we are coming back up into the region of the peaks from all the way back in 2014. So this is pretty rarefied territory, and it suggests that one of the staples of people's breakfast, their pork belly or bacon sarnies are going to start getting more expensive. And cotton prices have also been really quite firm. So it's not like every commodity is experiencing downward pressure, but this is simply a continuation of this by-turn movement that we're seeing in commodities. We're seeing them take turns, breaking out and surging on the upside. When one starts to peak, another one starts to take an additional leap higher. And this is all contributing to this continued advance in commodity prices overall. The supply chain difficulties that have crept in over the last few years and then been exacerbated by geopolitical conflict and uncertainty about how different countries will tackle the coronavirus, they're all contributing to higher prices for foodstuffs and commodities generally. When we then think about what's happening in stock markets, well, I thought that this is an interesting comparison that I basically copy and pasted the performance filter out of the chart library and into Excel because I wanted to see which were the instruments that had the biggest divergence between their 1 month and their 12-month performance. So the alternative harvest ETF had a 62% differential. It was down 51% over the year and up almost 11% over the last month. The emerging markets, internet, and e-commerce sector, which is loaded with those Chinese e-commerce companies, was down 45% over the year and only 7% over the month, but it is rebounding off the lows. The ARK Innovation ETF, is also rebounding off its lows. Bitcoin has bounced. The social media sector has bounced. But let's look at some of those charts, because what we're presented with is a picture of extraordinarily strong commonality between what are arguably not all that similar sectors. So we've had a really quite profound decline in some of those cannabis companies, where we had the spike higher in 2020 or 2021, and then they have come all the way back down and retraced the entire advance, but they're starting to steady right now. And then we can look at the Chinese tech companies. And it's a completely different market, but we have this large weekly upside Q reversal 3 weeks ago, and we're starting to see a little bit of follow-through on the upside right now. And then it's a very similar pattern for the ARK Innovation ETF, where we have the upside weekly Q reversal and then clear upside follow-through in here today. So that spreadsheet I was showing you, that was based on yesterday's closes, so it won't have taken into effect in or it won't have taken into account that the ARK Innovation ETF is now up on the year. Bitcoin was up in a strong manner yesterday and is now pairing the intraday decline. There was news in here today that another one of the exchanges, or at least it's a conduit allowing people to transfer tokens from one token into another, was hacked and $500 million stolen. Of course, because it's a public ledger, they usually get at least some of that money back, but it's going to inconvenience a lot of people. Then the social media ETF, it's not just Facebook or Meta platforms, but it's also pulled back in a violent manner, and we have the upside weekly Q reversals. And the China growth and income is another one that's sort of sticking out in this comparison. But I think we've seen enough of these types of trends where we get these just incredible declines over the last year, really acceleration down into very depressed levels, then upside weekly keys, and then extending those rebounds. One thing that is common to a lot of these sectors is less that they are related to one another, but more that they share the common characteristic of being interest rate sensitive, and that several of the companies in these sectors are very much dependent on access to liquidity. So, with the challenge of inflation and the threatening of raising interest rates, and we've already seen that financial conditions are tightening. We have an inverted yield curve between the 10 and the 2 year. And then there's still this argument about the 10 minus the 3 month, but when we look at this swap spread, it was also inverted this week. So, this is another way of looking at financial conditions. When we look at the Wuxia shadow rate from the financial or the Federal Reserve, it's tightened by about 200 basis points since November, and now it's back in positive territory. So this is a swifter pace of tightening than we saw between 2014 and 2015, and we had a good-sized wobble in 2016. So when we look at the longer-term chart here, well, we can see clearly that there is a sequence of lower rally highs, and an additional tightening of 200 basis points would take us back into a level of tightness similar to what we had in 2019. And that was also when we had an inverted yield curve. So what we're seeing here is that we're starting to see some evidence that the market is much more interest rate sensitive now than it was then. And we have this massive debt load that's been taken on. Total debt increased by a quarter during the pandemic. And that obviously makes countries and companies and individuals more interest rate sensitive. And consumer sentiment has rolled over. So when we simply look at the University of Michigan data, well, we can see that it has clearly rolled over, well on its way to trending downwards. We're coming or at least approaching that 50 area, but it's been coming down for 2 years already. And we're not all that far away from the negative sentiment levels that we were in 2008 and 2011. But back then, prices for everything were a lot lower. So it's, I think, a reasonable conclusion that we are late in the cycle. And if we're late in the cycle, then it's reasonable to anticipate that the most interest rate sensitive portions of the market are going to be volatile. So they've already been volatile in terms of the size of the declines. And now we're getting short covering rallies. And it's almost universal across that interest rate sensitive portion of the market. So they could quite easily unwind their oversold conditions relative to the 200-day moving average. And then we also have the standard bearers for liquidity, like Tesla, rebounding in very emphatic form, not necessarily because their business model has suddenly improved, but rather that they are going to split their shares. And this is people piling into the share because they believe in the bigger fool theory, that all they have to do is buy before the stock split, and somebody else will come in and pay those lower prices to support the share. But of course, ultimately it all comes down to earnings, and Tesla's been raising prices, and we're starting to get into an affordability issue. So when we think about wages, wage growth is going to have a hard time keeping pace with the way that companies are raising their prices. When the Model 3 started out, it was 35,000. Now it's 47,000, and wages have not increased by that much. So there's certainly an affordability issue that's starting to creep in, and that, of course, is why we're starting to see consumer sentiment rolling over. So we can think about housing affordability. and it's been coming down into rather depressed levels. Now, this, of course, hasn't been updated since the end of last year. Now, we're not at the level of unaffordability that prices were at in 2006, but it's certainly less affordable to buy homes for many people with mortgage rates rising. Now, the question, of course, is, have we seen the extent of the acceleration in bonds? And are we going to start to see a rebound? High yield bonds are beginning to rebound and have bounced from this 80 level. Again, it's an upside key reversal and beginnings of follow through right now. The 10-year Treasury future has pulled back in a violent manner over the last few weeks, and this today, at least, is the first evidence of some support coming through in a more meaningful fashion. It could quite easily unwind the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average, and even then still be in a downtrend overall. But we've had a really profound acceleration on the downside, so I don't think it's really ambitious to think that we're due some consolidation or at least a pause in this really acute selling pressure that we've seen at the longer end of the curve. And if bonds start to pull back and some of the tensions ease between Russia and the Ukraine, or at least that that particular crisis doesn't escalate in a rapid manner, well, then that should be reasonably benign for European stocks. And the Euro Stoxx 50 was up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today, so pushing back above the 1,000-day moving average this week, and quite likely that we've seen a medium-term low. The Nikkei was also in positive territory today and starting to push back up into the overhead trading range. So this is also starting to look like a low of at least near-term and potentially medium-term significance. We are starting to see some of the impetus in terms of shorting the yen starting to ease as well. But Japan isn't about to start raising rates, and the USA is still threatening it. So it's more likely than not that all we're going to see here is a pause. And not least because the yen is in the region of the lows put in back in 2015. So we have a very deep oversold condition, and I think it's quite likely we're going to have at least some ranging coming through in here. One of the most benign factors for the euro is that the stock market is starting to rally and the currency has also begun to steady. The currency's back in the region of historic lows and is steadying. So that's going to bolster the currency-adjusted returns of the stock market. And when we think about the kinds of sectors that do best in the latter stages of a big bull market, well, you usually get a late-stage run in commodities. So we're still going to see infrastructure development. There's still going to be a lot of money put into developing new infrastructure and to reduce reliance on places like Russia and China. So that's particularly going to be a focus in the energy sector. So we're going to see more demand for copper, more demand for nickel and lithium. It's also going to represent a clear trend of investment in more wind turbines, more solar panels, and there's a lot of money and a lot of focus and attention going into the hydrogen sector and the fusion sector. And there's an Australian startup is avoiding the tokamak type of spherical containment and acceleration of plasma and going more for basically shooting lasers at blocks of boron, and they claim to have created fusion reactions on a not on yet on a commercial scale, but They've created more fusion reactions than any of the other startups. But the very fact that we have startups in the fusion sector, well, that might be a factor of low interest rates, but it's also a testament to how much the technology has come along. There have been huge advances in superconductors and in lasers and in artificial intelligence. So we're not there yet, but there is the possibility, at least, that within the decade, one of the big intransigent challenges of energy will have been solved. So that would represent a profound change in terms of global economics. We are not there yet. It's somewhere out there in the foggy future. What we are likely to see, though, is a lot of investment in renewable energy infrastructure. There is a clear desire to come up with a viable solution for the EROI formula. So we need to get lots more energy versus how much is put in. Renewable energy right now does not solve that issue. It's distributed and it's not as efficient as gasoline. We need something orders of magnitude better, and that would create a profound change in the global economy. So it's certainly a sector that we do need to pay attention to. I think right now we have seen a sufficiently large pullback that we're likely to get additional upside. After an inverted yield curve, then we generally do get a rebound. It's when the yield curve spread turns around and starts accelerating higher. That is usually when we start to see some of the greatest pressure coming on stocks. This is the time to pay particular attention. When markets are rebounding, we can give them the benefit of the doubt. If we get lower highs and they start breaking back below their 200-day moving averages, then that's the time to be particularly diligent with stops. If this is the late stages of this expansion and we're moving into shorter economic cycles, because the last economic cycle lasted more than a decade, and it's quite possible that we're going to move into shorter cycles where we get much more volatility and we get trends that last for a couple of years and then start to pull back, and that we get efforts to try and contain inflation and then the inflation ebbs. So gold prices pulled back rather sharply initially today and then rebounded quite quickly, and now finishing out the day closer to $1,920. Well, if we are going to see fewer interest rate hikes, still the potential that we'll have a recession in the next 18 months, then that will require a monetary and fiscal response, then the purchasing power of fiat currencies is going to get flogged. And that's one of the primary reasons why gold has broken out and is sustaining that breakout. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.